I'm Sharon Sneer. You're listening to Grief's Gift, a podcast that explores stories of loss and grief, and how and where to find within these painful times some of life's most beautiful gifts. We all have the freedom to make choices out of the losses we experience. Courageous, creative, collaborative, and conscious choices that so often become the gifts we hold most dear. So welcome to the conversations, meditations, and connections that are grief's gift. I am delighted to be sitting in Zoom in front of Shauna Jans, and thankfully introduced by the wonderful Maggie Hamilton, who's overseas at the moment, but hopefully will listen to this. Shauna has a profession that I had not been acquainted with prior to this introduction. And I've done quite a bit of reading, but her background is so comprehensive. There is so much training that I'm going to use this interview as a way for her to talk about herself and talk about what she does. And the one of the questions that I want to ask you once we get started, Shauna, is a little a bit about what called you to do such sacred, profound work. And who was, you have a number of teachers, but who was your most profound shoulder on which you stood to step into the world of sacred grief? So let me say a little bit about Shauna before I throw her into the fire. Shauna's been facilitating, she's a psychotherapist, and has been facilitating individual, family, organizational, and community grief education, support and ritual, trauma-informed training. What a handful that is. She offers sacred grief online. She has the most extraordinary blog, which I read for about 2 hours last night because I read it twice. And I just learned so much just reading what you write about. I'd love you to talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's been a little while since I've written, so I was just curious which one specifically you are speaking to, and if it's, we can get there also. It just sparked the curiosity there.
Okay, so it was really the blog that spoke about your history of early childhood trauma and disassociation and needing to reconnect with the adult part of you.
Yes, yes. Okay.
The child part of you had disconnected for a number of traumatic reasons, which you didn't itemize, but I could recognize that. So let me also just say that I'm also from a tribe. I am from a Jewish background. Many of my family, my father's family, remained in Poland and were murdered by Nazis. And we lived with ongoing global anti-Semitism in varying degrees. So there's a part of me that really connects with you because I know that your ancestry is profoundly important and works towards you continuing the work you do. So on that note, welcome, Shauna.
Thank you, Sharon. Yeah, thank you just for such a generous and warm invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. And I've been looking forward to our conversation. Just your very meaningful invitation around, you know, what has drawn me into this work and perhaps a significant teacher or person in my life. So I'm sitting with that very much on my heart, but I'm very open to, if there's a different place to start first, I'm open to that.
Let's start where you're at and move towards how you got there.
Okay. Well, let's really speak to where I'm physically at right now. So I live on the west coast of Canada on Vancouver Island. I live in a beautiful valley that are the indigenous lands of the Aiyuksan, Pentlatch, and Comox First Nation peoples. So they have been the peoples who have been in right relationship and stewardship with this land for millennia before European ancestored people came here. I'm new to this community and for about a year and a half now. And I'm just so grateful, you know, a big part of how I am in the world and part of, you know, what I guide others through and that supports how we come back into an ethic of grieving as a way of loving and living is to also be in connection more with land and our other than human kin. So in the spirit of that, just to say, I've been very warmly welcomed here. The land here is wonderful. In the last year and a half, I've been walking the different places here and introducing myself and my ancestors and connecting in with some very specific elder tree ones and learning the different waterways and learning the history here. You know, to the west of me is a beautiful mountain range called the Strathcona Mountains, and there's a glacier there that the First Nations people refer to as the White Whale, and it plays a big part of their origin stories for this valley here. And then to the east of me is the Salish Sea, and so I'm in this beautiful, ecologically diverse watershed that I'm getting to know. So that's how I'm embedded physically and relationally with land and geography here. And I am on my mom's side, we are early colonial settlers to what I like to say is Turtle Island or to North America. We came from, because of the records were broken and lost, we were either from Irish or Scottish lands. And I believe through my own continued research and also spirit work that it's mainly from the Scottish Highlands. But we were early arrivers here on that lineage through the US, and I'm first generation Canadian through that lineage. And then on my dad's side, we were more recent immigrant refugees by way of Ukraine. And in that lineage, we were ethnically and religiously Mennonite. I didn't grow up in that because it was broken in the last generation. But that is part of the long tracks of a lot of migrations in the last 500 or 600 years. So in that lineage, I am second generation to Canada and the West Coast here. So that helps kind of situate me ancestrally and relationally and on the land here.
Mm. And given that history, what challenges did you find emerged for you, particularly as a child? Because I know these were significant enough for you to choose this calling.
Yeah, it's so interesting because thank you for that question. And I'm just trying to feel into, you know, where is the entry point for me in this question? And sometimes I feel like, gosh, the soul callings are not always clear. It's not like I always knew I was following this calling. It more was like, or not in an active conscious way, more like it was inviting me in, and I slowly came to understand that. But I would say also in response to your question in the introduction about how I got into sacred grief work. And, you know, there's a reason why many mystics and wisdom teachers speak to the wounds holding the wisdom of our life, or where the magic that we carry comes from, you know, the wounds that we carry also. And so in this moment, although there have been several pathways that have invited me in to the work of sacred grief and to recognizing and realizing its importance, not just in my life, but also in terms of collective healing work and liberation, and is due to intergenerational disconnections, as we all have in our ancestries. It also meant that my particular upbringing was with two parents who didn't have the resources or the experiences they needed early on in their life to be able to show up as a parent. And I say this not like, you know, I say this without any blame, because I feel really held in that larger intergenerational understanding and story. And it's taken a while to get to that place. The kind of biggest heartbreak that has gently nudged me along into this work is having grown up not receiving the care and attunement that I needed, and having had real defining experiences of neglect. It meant that I never really felt received here, earthside, coming into this world as Shauna Janz.
Mm-hmm.
And that has left a really, you know, I kind of say poetically, metaphorically, I came into the world heartbroken. Mm-hmm. And so the absences are what have the absences are what have led me into becoming very curious and having a deep yearning for what it means to really be here, to feel welcomed here, and to be able to access my heart and my emotions in that way. So that is what has led me. That has been at the essence of what has led me into sacred grief work. And that journey has been more consciously in the past 15 years, a real curiosity and drive to really deepen my self-awareness for my own healing work, and just my own fascination and curiosity about what it means to be a human, especially at this time. And so it's really led to a really rich and, as you kind of mentioned, a diverse breadth and depth of bodies of work that I'm pulling from that have supported my own healing and are also what I offer other folks who are called into the work of sacred grieving.
Mm. And what calls people into this? I mean, one of the reasons I started this podcast is because my husband died suddenly 4.5 years ago in 6 seconds in front of me, like just well dead. And the trauma of that was and sometimes still is resonating in my everyday life.
Yes.
And the inability for most people to really understand, they understand if they've lost a husband, but they don't understand that, you know, darling, you're home, darling, you died. So that's what called me into this, mm-hmm. other than being a psychotherapist and working with grief. But my interpretation of grief, my definition of grief, I think is different to yours. And that's what really touched me, because there's a sentence here, and I'm going all over the place because I really am so interested in everything. Our grief does not need our healing. Our healing needs our grief. And yes. I would love you to talk a little bit about that in relation to what we're doing here.
Yeah, thank you, Sharon. And just, I'm really sitting with, in a heartful way, your experience that you just shared. And so thank you. Yes, our grief doesn't need healing. Our healing needs our grief. What I have come to learn and be shown and to experience firsthand, and yes, through teachers and learning, but mainly through all the amazing people who have invited me in to their vulnerability and their grief. So those have been my greatest teachers, especially those who lived lives and experiences and identities much different than mine. But what I started recognizing, because I'm always weaving how the personal is connected to the cultural and the collective, and how we're embedded in all these different spheres of culture and these certain ways that we've been conditioned, either in ways that we understand or in kind of silenced or implicit ways that we, you know, just through actions or presences or absences, what we learn about grief. And I just started noticing, like, this is very interesting in the field of grief. There's a lot of talk about healing our grief. And I started questioning, like, it kind of felt like it was perhaps pathologizing it or somehow saying that that the grief itself was the wound or the grief itself was the pain. And then I started getting curious and it kind of just slowly clarified until I found myself saying that exact statement, which has been now kind of said many times and shared and uplifted, was it's like, wait a minute, like our grief is the way to our healing. Like our healing actually requires our grieving. Our grieving is an important and vital aspect of healing and or what I tend to say is of being able to carry our pain differently through time. Grieving helps us be with what is. And I think it's Bayo Akamalafe, a philosopher and mystic, who says this, and this is not a verbatim quote, but to the extent of, it is when our eyes are glistening with tears that we see most clearly.
Absolutely.
And I, gosh, like I just feel my heart expand in this moment. I feel my warmth in my body. I feel a settling. And it's like, here we are, you know, as humans, of which there's inevitable suffering and pain. And I see grief as a wise elder that comes in and helps us carry that and helps us be with it and helps us see whether it's a loved one of many years suddenly dying, whether it's the grief of childhood neglect, whether it's the grief of moving to a new country because your country is no longer safe to be in. Whatever it is that is the uniqueness of the pain that we all carry, grief is part of the medicine that supports us seeing what is, really being able to name and know what we care about and why we're grieving it and what deep needs and yearnings have been shaken up because of this loss or this disruption or disconnection. And then shows us when we have the support and relationships and rituals in our life that allows us to be met in our grief shows us how to carry this pain differently through time.
Mm. And as we do that for all.
Yeah.
There's so much fear around grief. So it's almost like, how do you make a dent in this resistance, this global resistance to feel the grief? It's huge, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I want to uplift for a minute that there's a reason why we fear grief. And there is wisdom in that fear and that resistance. It's all workable. But I would say, like, and many people who I've supported this, you know, this is part of the process. Like, what is the fear? And there's oftentimes we'll hear things like, well, if I dip in, I'll never come out. I'll be overwhelmed by it. I don't have the time for it. I've got kids and a job, or, you know, all very, very good reason. And I would say, and this is where sacred grief and kind of this work that I've been in and in relationship to for so long, it's recognizing grieving is a learned skill. Like we all feel emotions and have emotions, but the actual act of grieving and the relationships and the rituals around it or not around it, what we believe is worthy of grief, how to express it, when to express it, are we worthy? Do we have the capacity? All of these things mean that grieving is learned. And many of us in this modern, more colonial and capitalist driven culture, in a dominant culture, are no longer learning the skills of grieving. So there is an inherent wisdom in our response with fear. because we have not actually learned or experienced being met well and having both the like the body and psychological and somatic resiliency and robustness to have experienced it, to know that despite the pain, we got this. Many of us have not had those experiences growing up in pivotal formative developmental years. Mm-hmm. And we definitely don't live in a culture that's giving us opportunities to learn a healthy relationship with grieving. You know, we're told to move on or to get over it or to do it behind closed doors, to do it in isolation. We're told that, you know, your bereavement leave for losing your partner of life is 4 days off of work, but we expect you to be back after that, right? So there is a reason why we have fear of grieving, because we rightfully have, many of us have not had both the personal and cultural experiences of being met well in it, so that we can be with the grief in a relational, supportive way.
And do you take from other Indigenous societies their way of grieving? Because I see this so specifically as Western interruption. As you say, this capitalist force that says you need to get back out there for all these reasons. But do you use other Indigenous societies' wisdom of how they grieve and bring that into your work?
What I can say is I've definitely been thankful and grateful for the opportunities where I've been invited in to Indigenous communities to work alongside them in speaking and being in relationship to grief, for sure. And I think any what we might call undisrupted or more impact or cultural life ways, regardless of how a person, what their ancestry is, all cultures and all humans in all different times and places have had healthy relationships to grief. And so there's an inherently human wisdom there, and there's very specific ways that we can reconnect with our own specific ancestrally relevant cultural life ways, even if we've been disrupted from them for a long time. So uplifting, yes, the beautiful ways and the resilient ways that many Indigenous communities are fighting back to claim and to be still in their practices and cultural life ways. And what I invite, especially the majority of the folks that I'm working with, are white people who are of Europe, of some type of European ancestry, who've been disconnected from cultural life ways for a long time. Mm-hmm. So the invitation is to actually look into our own ancestral life ways, to the rituals, the songs, the myths, the stories, the relationships to land that would have held in a very specific, culturally specific way our own people's grief. And for a lot of us, that is grief worthy in itself, because we're having to patchwork or reimagine that. You know, I think we can definitely uplift the many, you know, there's many cultures of diasporas that have, humans are intimately creative people, and ritual is our birthright, and ways of coming together to grieve is our birthright. So we find ways to do that. And it can take work. Yeah.
Yeah.
So and I also.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that you bring in the word ritual, which is such a significant part of your work, because I've used ritual with my clients and myself for, you know, going on 40 years. And even 40 years later, people that have lost a baby or, you know, a termination or whatever, still go back to the place where we created ritual, whether it's physical or emotional, and get so much support from that. And we have forgotten ritual in so much of our lives. Can you tell me a little bit about what you mean by spiritual bypassing? You use that term.
Yeah, that's a term that was coined by John Wellwood back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And it was understanding that with the rise of Western psychotherapy, and then also as we saw many people kind of bringing over Eastern philosophy and marrying it with Western psychotherapy, which has a lot of beautiful possibilities in it, there can be, and I say this with so much compassion, because again, this is a cultural wounding that shows up in individuals, and it's at its essence, spiritual bypassing is another way of saying it's anything that we do that actually takes us further from what really is, or further from our heart, or further from the realities of what is here and now, to kind of gloss over or only have an intellectual or spiritual understanding of a circumstance rather than being in the feeling and the actual experience of it. Now, I want to just say again, I'm so much compassion here. It's problematic. You know, we need to recognize where we're doing that ourselves. And again, there's a reason why we have perhaps pretty deep protective strategies that want to take us away from the pain, right? Because we haven't had the experiences of knowing how to hold it. But the real work is to gain the skills, the somatic resilience, the psychological grief literacy, community, learning around it, ritual, so that we can come into and actually feel the grief, know that we got this despite the pain. We have bodies and nervous systems that can actually be with the pain and process it and allow grief to flow through. And again, the gift of grief being it allows us to really see what is. And when we can see clearly what is, that means we're making more appropriate and right-sized responses in our world, whether that's personal choices or in relationship to others. So spiritual bypassing is saying that we're going away from what we need to feel, and then we're making decisions from that tend to be deeply misattuned and can cause more harm.
Hi, this is Sharon Sneer, and you're listening to Grief's Gift. If you resonate with what you're hearing, please don't forget to let your friends and family know. And if you have your own experience that you would like to share, please contact me on www.sharonsneer.com or on my email, sharon@sharonsneer.com. Thank you so much for listening to Grief's Gift. What I'm understanding is that what is important in good grief is practicing how to support yourself privately and in community by knowing that you will not fall through a rabbit hole. That's kind of what you're saying, that, you know, to get that muscle working, that you can literally go to where you need to go. And, you know, I went to the deepest levels of grief. And I found that after I did that, there was a calm that I could not have attained without the howling and the wailing that I needed to do at the time.
Yes.
But you're not only talking about that grief, you're talking about a perpetual grief that exists within, that people are often not conscious of, but impacts their life.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. I would say, you know, there's ancestral grief. Many of us have ancestors who have come before us that also carried unmetabolized grief or traumatic experiences and how that plays through. And of course, science is catching up in terms of epigenetics, how that we can very physically and neurobiologically be carried within us, but also just through behaviors that are passed down that used to be old ways of coping with trauma that just then start to become the way we do things in this family, for example, right? And so the image I get, you know, as you are speaking about like that calm that came after the howling and the waves of pain and this like, yeah, strengthening this muscle. The image I get is like, I think many of us in ways that we're conscious and unconscious of have like a dam upriver. You know, if there's a big dam upriver and there's a big reservoir of unmetabolized grief, there's water there, it's unmetabolized grief. And of course we have fear. We can't just go there and lift the dam because the riverbeds aren't strong enough yet, right? It would just flood the landscape and take things out. And if the land has been really dry for a long time, it's not going to absorb anything. It's going to be very destructive, right? And so what is it that helps us to strengthen those riverbeds, strengthen our nervous system resiliency to be with grief, which is actually a very expansive energy? So how do we be with the expansiveness of grief? Grief, despite the pain, has an energy that really wants to move towards remembering.
Yeah.
Grief wants to talk about our loved one who died. Grief wants to share despite the pain. So it's actually a very expansive and connective energy, but sometimes if we're not used to it, then it needs some like very practical practices that we can do. And, you know, this is part of what's the foundation of sacred grief is. So strengthening those riverbeds in our nervous system, in our body, in our understanding of grief and grief literacy and psychoeducation, and in the relationships we have with other humans, but also the beautiful world around us of other than humans that are also can be there in a relational reciprocity and support of grieving. What are the practices, the traditions, the beliefs, the spiritual understandings that we have that help to build and strengthen those riverbeds so that we can start to lift that dam bit by bit, and the flow that comes out is not overwhelming. It actually is directional. It's coming down that river, contained within the riverbeds. Lots of movement, sometimes very fast, but still within the riverbed, and it's making its way to, in the way that speaks to me, like to back to the source, back to ocean, back to, you know, part of our the source of whatever that is for us, in how we, in our love, right? So those riverbeds are strengthened by, yes, grief literacy. It's strengthened by the people in our lives that know how to show up and be alongside us without trying to fix us while we're in our grief. Those riverbeds are strengthened by people who invite ritual back into their lives to help hold and mark the rite of passage that grief is often a part of. It is our relationship to cultural traditions or reviving them, etc. So yeah, we're strengthening those riverbeds.
I really love that metaphor, and I will call this podcast Strengthening Our Riverbeds. It's just a beautiful, beautiful image, and makes grief beautiful, really, in so many ways. I love the expansion concept. I think, is there something else that you need to say or would like to say before we complete this wonderful conversation?
Yeah, I'm looking out the window and kind of feeling into that. And then I look right on over to this artwork and expression that I've had on the wall for years that follows me around anywhere I go. And it's a Joanna Macy expression or quote, and it's, "The heart that breaks open can contain the whole universe." The heart that breaks open. And I might even start to invite different language, the heart that expands, the heart that is with the pain expands to include all other beings, like that includes the universe. Mm. And so I'm just thankful. I'm very grateful to have been in this conversation with you, Sharon. And if I'd want to leave the listeners with anything, is first gratitude for spending the time to listen. And also, that grieving really brings us into our humanity. And this is all workable. We all have a birthright. And there is a deep kind of inherent bone knowing that we know how to be with grief. Mm. And grieving is part of the medicine for our pain. And when fear and trepidation and resistance arise, that isn't an individual fault. There's nothing you're doing wrong. It's not because you are incapable. That's a larger cultural wound. And it's all workable. So we take things at the speed of trusting our capacity and get the support that we need, and slowly we strengthen those riverbeds. And it's very doable.
That's so beautiful. Shauna, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. I have learned so much. And on top of that, felt a sense of affirmation that how I have grieved and grieve is supporting not only me, but giving out an energy of permission to others to explore their own grief in their own way, but through ritual, through support, through community, and through the work that you're doing. So on behalf of everyone that's been and will be in your presence, I want to thank you.
Oh, Sharon, thank you.
Thank you so much. And hopefully we'll meet. Hopefully I will come to
beautiful,
beautiful Vancouver, which I love. I just love Vancouver. I love Canada so much. It was the last holiday my husband and I ever took. And we spent a month in Canada. And it holds a really, really special part in my heart. So it's my intention to come back.
Yeah. Well, and I have never been to Australia before. I do have some family there. And
really?
My hope is to eventually, be able to come there. So
that sounds wonderful. Where is your family? Yeah. Where are they?
Many are in Melbourne.
Okay. Right. Lovely place. Mm-hmm. Gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. Okay. Thank you so much, Tony. You have a lovely evening.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.